Here, a world is clashing. It is the beginning of the end of the League of Nations. Imperturbably, pathetic but purposeful, a small, thin man of great dignity stands before the representatives of the nations assembled in the League at Geneva. Italy had invaded this man's country. The aggressor, fascist Italy, had stated boldly it was pursuing a sacred mission of civilization. Haile Selassie, the Negus, Lion of Judah, Emperor of Ethiopia, waits until order is at last restored. Now we hear him. In his native tongue, Amharic. I, Haile Selassie I, Emperor of Ethiopia, am here today to claim that justice is due my people and the assistance promised to it 8 months ago by 52 nations who asserted that an act of aggression. I ask the 52 nations, what are they willing to do for Ethiopia? I ask the great powers, what measures do they intend to take? Representatives of the world, what answer am I to take back to my people?
The answer from the League of Nations was no. They would not interfere with the troops of the fascist dictator. Ethiopia must stand on its own. The proud emperor of this ancient land must fight his own battles or go to live in exile. 31 years ago this month, by that action, the League of Nations sealed its own death warrant. Project 67 presents the Conquering Lion of Judah, a profile study of His Imperial Majesty Haile Selassie I, Emperor of Ethiopia.
I'm Bill McNeil. Earlier this year, I had the great pleasure of meeting personally the Lion of Judah when he visited Canada at Expo 67. I rode with him aboard the Royal Train from Winnipeg to North Bay, sat with him in his private car, talked with him about himself and his country, and felt the thrill of meeting face to face an unforgettable figure from the pages of history. This is a story about a man and his country, Selassie of Ethiopia. If you look at the map of Africa, you will find Ethiopia, the country of spectacular mountains and thirsty deserts, covering most of Africa's eastern horn. It is bounded by the Red Sea to the northeast, the Sudan Republic on the north and west, Somalia on the east, and Kenya on the south. It covers an area of about 457,000 square miles, with a population of 22 million, about the same as Canada. Mr. Robert Thompson, former leader of the Social Credit Party in Canada, lived in Ethiopia for 15 years and knows the country inside out. I asked him,
Mr. Thompson, what is Ethiopia like?
Well, Ethiopia has been called the Switzerland of Africa. Basically, it is a very large country, comparatively speaking, much bigger than France, as big as British Columbia and Alberta together, bigger than the province of Ontario, with more people than we have in Canada, approximately 22 million. Because it is a mountain country, the climate is moderate. Because it is in the monsoon area, there is a lot of rain, particularly in the high areas. It is an agricultural economy. It is certainly one of the most pleasant countries in Africa, and the Ethiopian people are one of the most pleasant and hospitable people.
Ethiopia is one of the few African countries whose ancient and medieval history is known. From remote times, the so-called Horn of Africa has been inhabited by Hamitic and Sudanese peoples who have for centuries been subject to an influx of Semitic elements from southwestern Arabia. It was from a mixture of this kind that the population originated, that at the beginning of the Christian era established the state of Aksum, ruled by Ethiopian kings, linked to Arabian kingdoms. From the 2nd century B.C., the kingdom of Aksum gradually loosened these ties and became autonomous, and the Ethiopian kings took the title Negus Negusti, or King of Kings. Ethiopians proudly claim 2,000 or 3,000 years of independence. This independence suffered a 5-year break under Italian rule between 1935 and 1941. Ethiopia was hardly heard of outside her frontiers until 1935, when Mussolini invaded it. Towards the end of 1935, Italian aircraft hurled upon the Ethiopian armies bombs of tear gas. Their effects were slight. The soldiers learned to scatter. The Italian aircraft then resorted to mustard gas. Special sprayers were installed on aircraft so that they could vaporize over vast areas of territory a fine, death-dealing rain. Women, children, cattle, rivers, lakes, and pastures were drenched continually with this deadly rain. 31 years ago this week, every newspaper in the world carried stories about the spunky little Ethiopian monarch, Haile Selassie I, the conquering lion of the tribe of Judah, elect of God, King of Kings, power of the Trinity, Emperor of Ethiopia, who is just over 5 feet tall and weighs 100 pounds, who refused to admit defeat to the Italians, who, with his half-naked, poorly armed warriors, made a last-ditch stand at Addis Ababa against Benito Mussolini's forces. But finally, the emperor had to flee the country with his family. On the 30th of June, 1936, he appealed to the League of Nations in Geneva. During Haile Selassie's recent visit to Canada last April, Bill McNeil interviewed him on his train trip between Winnipeg and North Bay, and first of all asked him about that unforgettable day.
Your Imperial Majesty, I'd like you to talk about your appearance before the League of Nations when you pleaded for your country in
1936.
Yes, the Ethiopian people, as well as myself, fought as much as we could on the ground, the fascist aggressors. But as it is well known, the fascists were well armed. They had the latest weapons. They had air power. Ethiopia had possessed none. After losing the battle in the front, we thought we should start another battle, a political battle at the League of Nations. You have heard of the speech I have made and of the appeal I have made to the League of Nations in 1936.
It is Majesty the Negus Haile Selassie. Mr. President. Italian fascist newspapermen interrupt the Lion of Judah. They whistle, boo, and shout. Other delegates and spectators applaud the emperor. The League system of collective security is collapsing, an omen of the anarchy about to engulf Europe. After 2 minutes, order is restored and Haile Selassie speaks in his native tongue, Amharic. There is no precedent for a head of state speaking in the assembly. But there is also no precedent for a people being victim of such injustice and being threatened by abandonment to its aggressor. The precedent was established then and there. England and France abandoned Ethiopia to Mussolini.
Your Imperial Majesty, what were your own personal feelings at that time?
My personal feeling was my hope I continue to struggle to have our freedom from the fascists.
Did you ever give up hope, Your Imperial Majesty?
Never. In any time, I continue with big hope because I have a relation with my patriot people. I continue to encourage them. They continue their struggle.
His claim against Italy was not supported. On the contrary, the assembly decided that the economic sanctions voted earlier against Italy should be ended. Thus, the Ethiopian Empire was annexed and was joined with Eritrea and Italian Somaliland to form Italian East Africa. And the emperor sought refuge in England as plain Mr. Tafari Makonnen. His imperial crown was kept locked up in a London safe.
You kept working while you were in Britain. You were in exile in Britain. For how many years?
4 years and a half.
And you knew all during that period that someday your day would come?
If I haven't this hope, I can't resist to live with this hope. I hope, very strong hope, I live 4 years and a half in England.
In England, he received sympathy, the offer of a role in a movie, and an invitation to appear at the Texas Centennial Exhibition, but little financial support for a proposed $10 million war chest. He didn't give up hope of what he called the ultimate triumph of international justice, and he continued to appeal for it. In 1940, Italy declared war on the Western Allies in World War II. Haile Selassie was then flown to Khartoum in the Sudan to start rallying some of his 10 million former subjects into taking arms with British troops. And when the British forces defeated the Italians and occupied Addis Ababa, the Lion of Judah joyfully went back to his throne on the 5th of May, 1941, and resumed his reign.
Your country like today? Do you have many problems in Ethiopia?
The famine problem and the yellow problem is who?
Yes, the problem we have in Ethiopia is essentially the same as in all other developing countries. The problem that we face is how to quickly raise the standard of living of our people, how to strengthen our democratic constitution in practice. But there is no problem as opposition to the state or opposition to me.
Since his restoration in 1941, the Lion of Judah has carried out a program of modernization and of political and social reform, and has begun to westernize the 2,000-year-old Coptic Christian Ethiopia. He created a strong, centralized monarchy. The country, with its 22 million people, revolves around his personal rule.
You are descended, Your Imperial Majesty, from King Solomon and the Queen of Sheba.
This is just our story, ancient story. The Queen of Sheba, she go to visit Solomon, King Solomon. She met one friend. She returned back to her country. Our story says since that time, we send from King Solomon comes.
Haile Selassie comes from a line that traditionally sprang from the admiring visit of Makeda, the Queen of Sheba, to King Solomon. She, an Arabian queen, went to Jerusalem to test the wisdom of Solomon, who was said to be the wisest of the kings of Israel, about 950 years before Christ. In the scriptures, the book of Second Chronicles tells that King Solomon gave to the Queen of Sheba all her desire. The traditional story holds that Menelik, son of their romance, went to the state of Aksum, which is Sheba, or Shoa, as it is called today, and which is the main province of Ethiopia, and became the first Ethiopian emperor. This, for the Ethiopian Amharic Christians, who came originally from Arabia, is the beginning of their royal line. From Menelik, most late rulers of Ethiopia, including Haile Selassie, have claimed descent.
You are the 334th in the line of succession.
Yes, exactly.
And the 134th of the Christian kings. Christianity came to Ethiopia, I believe, in 330 A.D.
If you read the Bible, you can't get this. What time the Christianity comes in Ethiopia?
The book of Acts of the Apostles in the New Testament mentions the story of the first convert to Christianity. That was the Ethiopian eunuch who was the courtier of Candace, Queen of Ethiopia. He had been up to worship at Jerusalem, and on his way home, driving along in his chariot and reading the prophet Isaiah, met the apostle Philip, who preached to him about Christ, the Son of God. And when the eunuch believed, Philip baptized him in the water, and the eunuch went on his way home rejoicing. This, according to the Bible, is the first Ethiopian to be converted to Christianity. The story is found in the book of Acts, chapter 8, verses 26 to 39.
Ethiopia has been a Christian country since the 4th century. In the year 341 A.D., a certain Frumentius, on a journey from Tyre with his brother, was captured at an Ethiopian port and sent to King Izana at Aksum. The two young men won the confidence of the king and began to evangelize the country. Later, Frumentius went to Alexandria, where he was consecrated by Athanasius the Great, Patriarch of Alexandria and writer of the Creed, to be the first bishop of Ethiopia. Since then, Ethiopia remained a province of the Coptic Church of Alexandria, which always consecrated an Egyptian monk as archbishop, or abuna, of this independent church, and sent him away to Ethiopia. Since 1959, and after a struggle for self-independence, the archbishopric of Ethiopia was raised to a patriarchate by His Holiness Pope Kyrillos of Alexandria and Patriarch of the See of St. Mark, who retains a primacy of honor in Ethiopia. The Coptic Church, and consequently the Ethiopian Church, belongs to the monophysite group of churches which teach that Christ had one nature, that his humanity and divinity became one without intermixing, and that his divinity never separated from his humanity. There are thousands of churches in Ethiopia, usually round, made of mud bricks, and thatched with straw. They contain three concentric circles, and in the center, behind doors, is the sanctuary with a square altar on which stands the Ark of the Covenant. The church now celebrates the liturgy in a dead version of Amharic, which is called Jais. Selassie was born on July 24, 1891, and was named Ras Tafari Makonnen. His father was a viceroy to the throne and had his son privately tutored in French at the age of six. At 18, shortly after his father died, he became governor of a province. In 1928, he led the troops that killed Empress Zoditu's husband, who was not of royal blood, and became regent. He became emperor on November 2, 1930, and was crowned Haile Selassie I, King of Kings, King of Zion, conquering lion of the seed of Judah, power of the Trinity.
Your Imperial Majesty, you were 39 years old when you were crowned in 1930.
Yes.
Could you talk a bit about the day of the coronation?
Yes, my coronation day was very memorable to me. Not only we had Ethiopian participants in the event, but also a lot of foreign emissaries partook in the celebration of the coronation day.
The coronation itself was a Coptic service, Your Imperial Majesty.
They are the Coptic, but also the Ethiopian bishop. They are with the Coptic churchman.
Second, 1930, was a memorable day in the history of Ethiopia. Since the early hours of that morning, all in Addis Ababa began to prepare for the impressive event of the morning. The Emperor and Empress Manen had already spent the hours since the night before in prayer and meditation with the priests at the most holy altar within St. George's Cathedral, the largest church in the capital. Through the early morning, the chanting of priests continued. Outside the church, and nearly all over Addis Ababa, devoted subjects were dancing and chanting praise songs for the new emperor in Amharic.
The son of Ras Makonnen, Haile Selassie, will feed us. His justice is like that of an angel. May God give long life to Haile Selassie, the child of our country.
The ritualistic ceremonies of the coronation were performed in a large auditorium adjacent to the west side of the cathedral, which had been especially constructed for the occasion.
Shortly after 7:30 a.m., His Imperial Majesty, attired in white silk communion robes, entered the ceremonial hall from the church with an escort of aides and the clergy, chanting in the old Coptic language a processional hymn. The spiritual vestment is worn by the Archangel Michael. The precious Jezebel is worn by Michael.
The emperor took his place on the throne. Thereupon the ceremony began. The Coptic Archbishop of Ethiopia, representing His Holiness the Pope of Alexandria, with his throaty voice, announced,
"Ye princes and ministers, ye nobles and chiefs of the army, ye professors and priests, ye people of Ethiopia, look ye upon our Emperor Haile Selassie I, descended from the dynasty of Menelik I, who was born of Solomon and the Queen of Sheba, a dynasty perpetuated without interruption from that time to King Haile Selassie and to our times."
The emperor was then vested with the seven ornaments of the coronation, including his gold sword studded with precious stones, a diamond-encrusted ring, two traditional lances, the imperial scepter, and a golden globe of the earth, the imperial vestments, and at last came the magnificent crown. Seven differently scented ointments of ancient prescription were received on the imperial head, brow, and shoulders, one with each of these ornaments. The final ceremony was a grand tour of the cathedral by the emperor and empress, who was also crowned, but with less elaborate rites. They were escorted by the priests and bishops, princes and high dignitaries, Ethiopian bishops and priests from all over Ethiopia, and a large number of Coptic deacons, carrying palm branches and chanting in mighty volume.
Hosanna, blessed be the King of Israel. Blessed is he who cometh in the name of the Lord.
Before the questioning of the Abuna, the emperor gave his sacred pledge to uphold the Orthodox religion of the Coptic Church of Alexandria to support and administer the laws of the country for the betterment of the people and to maintain the integrity of Ethiopia.
The emperor is just slightly over 5 feet tall, but I don't think there is any more noble-bearing person in the world.
I agree with you, and when you consider that he is 74 years of age, has gone through the tremendous trials that he has in matters of state, but also matters of his own family. Very few people realize the tragedy that has been in his own family when four of his six children have died, and all of them under what must have been very difficult circumstances. His second son, who was so very close to him, was killed in a motor accident. Another son died of a very serious disease. One of his daughters, whom he had so much respect and love for, as I had seen it, died in childbirth. Surely it has been a difficult life he has had, and yet he is one of the most gracious, one of the most humane, and certainly one of the most distinguished men I have ever known.
Ethiopian policy under Haile Selassie has always been directed, first of all, toward education, and secondly, toward modernization. Since his restoration in 1941, he put Canadian officials in the key ministries of finance and commerce. In education, more than 20% of Ethiopia's teachers are from Canada.
People in Ethiopia are then aware of Canada.
Yes, Ethiopians know quite a bit about Canada. It is the first country we brought teachers from. There are still Canadian teachers in Ethiopia, and I hope we are going to get more Canadian teachers into Ethiopia in the near future.
Mr. Robert Thompson of the Social Credit Party in Canada was a teacher in Ethiopia. Mr. Thompson, you spent many years in Ethiopia. What was the occasion of your going there in the first place?
Well, in 1943, following the defeat of the fascists in Ethiopia, there was no rehabilitation program available to that country, such as there was later for Italy, for Holland, for Denmark, for Norway. And consequently, anything that was done from the outside was done on a quasi or a quasi-official or an unofficial basis. As a result, the Emperor Haile Selassie sent out a call to friends of his that he had known in Bath during the exile or prior to the takeover by the fascists, asking for volunteers, doctors, nurses, and teachers. At that time, I had two connections who were friends of the emperor. One was my padre in the RAF in Canada, Wing Commander Gregson. The other was Dr. R.V. Bingham in Toronto, who was head of the Sudan Interior Mission. When they heard, or when they received word from the emperor in regard to the need for technical help and rehabilitation services, they came to me and suggested 1943 to Ethiopia. In the first instance, I served in the first secondary school as vice principal, then went on into the Ethiopian Air Force for the duration, then back into secondary education, and later on into administration, where I served in a position which would be equivalent here to deputy minister.
You actually fought on the side of Ethiopia during the war?
Well, no, not exactly in that way. We were instrumental in setting up the first training.
Responsible for the education of the emperor's children?
Well, I was responsible for the placing of students in foreign universities, many of whom came to Canada. We also were responsible for setting up some of the schools in Ethiopia, and thus a number of the royal family, as well as many hundreds of other Ethiopians, came into our hands, yes.
You must have, during your time in Ethiopia, got to know the emperor very well.
Well, the emperor retained, up until just recently, the post of Minister of Education. He had a vice minister who actually carried on the day-to-day administration, but the emperor reserved the office for himself. And consequently, for at least 6 years, he was my direct boss, so to speak. I had a telephone line to his palace, to his office as well, and we were in constant connection with him, not only in regard to developing education, but to many foreign assignments that I was sent on during these years.
During my brief meeting with him, I found him to be a very human sort of person.
This trip has been a real privilege for me because I have eaten my meals with him on the Royal Train, and I have spent at least 3-4 hours in consultation about world issues, about the Canadian scene and about the developing situation in Ethiopia. And so I could only agree with you entirely that he is truly one of the great statesmen of the world.
I remember back in 1936 when he appeared before the League of Nations. I was quite young at that time, but I remember shedding more than one tear for the emperor.
I, too, was very interested in that time, and I suppose when the opportunity came to go to Ethiopia that this was part of the background of it, because you will recall that the Japanese had invaded China at the same time. And I can recall as a high school student and then later as a young teacher my own concern about the Japanese invasion of China and the fascist invasion of Ethiopia.
Despite the emperor's efforts to promote education and modernize the country, there were genuine grievances in Ethiopia. In December 1960, during the absence of the emperor in Brazil, a coup d'etat was attempted by senior officers of the Imperial Guard and a group of young administrators. Addis Ababa was seized, and the crown prince was proclaimed emperor. The rebellion was crushed by the loyal regular army, who released the crown prince, and millions of Ethiopians recalled the emperor's words when he was forced to flee from the fascist hordes 31 years ago. "I will reorganize and fight again." Haile Selassie returned from Brazil, and order was quickly restored. The rebel general was hanged in the public marketplace. The crown prince escaped punishment, as the moderates maintained that he acted under duress.
Will your son succeed you on the throne, Your Imperial Majesty?
Why you ask me this? If he can't inherit my throne, why I say he's a parent of the throne of Ethiopia?
Succession to the throne in Ethiopia is inherited as to family, but not necessarily as to individual. The strongest or most astute prince of the family succeeds to the imperial crown. Succession is now limited to one of the royal line of Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. The emperor has been delegating his ceremonial duties increasingly to his eldest son and heir, Crown Prince Aspawasan, who has recently been playing a more important role in public life. The strengthening of the crown prince's position is a vital element in Ethiopia's future stability.
Your Imperial Majesty, I'd like to talk about the form of government in Ethiopia.
The form of government we have in Ethiopia is essentially what we have inherited from our forefathers. We have nearly established the constitution in order to give it a legal and a firm basis. In order to have a firm democratic basis, you must have education on a wider scale. For that purpose, we have seen to it that educational facilities are expanded throughout the country. We based ourselves on certain fundamental democratic ideologies. These have been practiced by our forefathers. We give legal sanction to it, and this, in the broad aspect, is the general framework of the Ethiopian governmental institution. What the people of Ethiopia need now is to get as much foreign aid as possible, so that the developmental process of the country will be quickened. And once we achieve this, we are going to be in a position to make, with other countries, maximum contribution to the maintenance of international peace and security.
Is there a parliament in Ethiopia, Your Imperial Majesty?
Since I gave the constitution, we have the parliament with all power. We gave the power useful for the parliament.
Would the parliament be very much like the one we have here in Canada, with elected members from all over the country?
We have two chambers in our parliament. One is the Senate, whose members are appointed by the government. The other is the lower house, or House of Representatives, whose members are elected directly by the people. These two bodies work in cooperation, and together they constitute the Parliament of Ethiopia.
Millions of Christians throughout the world, Your Imperial Majesty, who regard you as the reincarnation of Jesus Christ.
I had heard of that idea. I also met certain Rastafarians. I told them clearly that I am a man, that I am mortal, and that I will be replaced by the oncoming generation, and that they should never make a mistake in assuming or pretending that the human being is emanated from a deity.
But despite this clear declaration, Millions of Ethiopians still believe that he is the reincarnation of Jesus Christ. Others at least proclaim him the defender of their faith and the symbol of their power. They always sing to him songs of praise.
The son of Ras Makonnen, Haile Selassie, is astute. Ethiopia is very happy. Be her confessor. O Haile Selassie, sanctity becomes you.
Could we come down now, Your Imperial Majesties, of things more worldly, and we'll talk about, first of all, your little dog. How long has the dog been with us?
Five years.
Do you ever have any trouble taking him from country to country?
No, any trouble. He is very intelligent dog.
He's your eternal companion.
Yes.
Do you have any other pets?
I have in my palace many lions, dogs, other animals also. Generally, I like very much the animal.
The Lion of Judah keeps 26 lions. The emperor's lions are like enormous pet dogs, the way they lie around the palaces of Ethiopia. Two of his lions roam free in the imperial grounds. One is reputed to travel in its own jeep.
I believe coffee is the principal export of Ethiopia.
Yes, we have coffee. I can't say the name of coffee also comes from Ethiopia.
It's the Longberry Mocha, I believe it's.
We have the quality of mocha and other quality of.
The Ethiopian economy is primarily agricultural and pastoral. Coffee is the most important cash crop, which provides an annual export value of about 300 million Ethiopian dollars. In fact, Ethiopia is the home of coffee. The tree was found in the Ethiopian province of Kaffa, from which it took its name. Coffee now grows mainly in the Walaga, Kaffa, and Sidamo districts in the southwest, and Harar in the east. The next most important exports are hides and skins.
Is there an attempt made in your country to expand other types of industry?
Industry is developed in our country, but we do not find the rate of growth fully satisfactory. And I'm confident that we'll quicken the pace of industrial development.
In 1964, Ethiopia acquired the new status symbol of developing nations, television.
Is television a factor in your country?
Yes, in our capital, in Addis Ababa, we have television. It's quite educational.
You don't import American or Canadian programs. It's mostly an educational network, is it?
He's an information minister. He can tell you in the time.
Programs from the United States, from England, also for Canadian pictures that are supplied to us by the embassy, and we also conduct live programs. Now our live program is 50%.
I would like to now pass the microphone to Mr. Thompson. I'm sure there are many things about the country that are still missing from our interview, so if I could pass this to you, Mr. Thompson, and let you take up any of the gaps that I've missed.
I wonder, Your Imperial Majesty, if you could tell us what you consider to be the most important assistance that we could give to you as you become an ever-increasing important nation in the world.
I would like to discuss this topic after I see the Prime Minister of Canada, and then I'll be free to discuss this matter. I have prepared a list of the kind of assistance that is required from the Canadian government, and I will have the opportunity of submitting it to the Prime Minister of Canada.
Another aspect of Ethiopia we have not talked about is the fact that in Addis Ababa is located the United Nations of Africa, the Organization of African Unity, the beautiful Africa Hall. Likewise, there is located in Addis Ababa the United Nations Technical Assistance Program for Africa. The role of Ethiopia in bringing Africa into her own has been led by Your Imperial Majesty. Would you care to comment on the importance of the OAU in Africa, Your Imperial Majesty?
Africa, fitting the whole Africa Orochi,
the people of Africa had closer sentiments to each other, even before they were free. I remember when our country fell a victim to fascist aggressors, we got the sympathy of Africans everywhere. But at that time, since the African people were not free, they were not in a position to manifest in concrete fashion their sympathy and their detest for fascist aggression. However, now that the African people are free, they wanted to get together for the purpose of widening the sphere of cooperation among them. And in this respect, Ethiopia is proud in being the site at which the Organization of African Unity has been established and where the headquarters of the organization has been housed. Africans are brothers. We have the same goal. We cherish the same ideas. Our problems are problems of development, problems of increasing cooperation. And as such, we shall forever march together to fulfill our aspirations as Africans. I also believe that when African people get closer and expand the sphere of their mutual cooperation, then Africa as a continent will be in a position to have a significant voice in the international affairs which affect the question of peace and war.
Your Imperial Majesty, last year Canada finally opened an embassy in Addis Ababa. Will Ethiopia be opening an embassy in Ottawa in the near future?
Canada and Ethiopia had concluded an agreement about the establishment of diplomatic relations. I am glad to see that Canada has fulfilled her part of the promise and established an embassy in Addis Ababa. We are also in the process of doing that. And when I arrive in Ottawa, I'll be in a position to explain to the Prime Minister of Canada about our determination to establish an embassy in Canada as soon as circumstances permit.
On behalf of fellow Canadians, we are delighted that you are in our country. In the past several days, you've had an opportunity to travel almost from one coast to the other. You're just coming to the end of that trip now. Do you have an impression of Canada?
I was happy and highly impressed by what I saw in Canada. I saw the genuine sentiment of the people, the affection that they have entertained for our people. It was a happy occasion for me to see that. And I'm really delighted.